But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell. And I'm here on this Sunday morning with Stu Schrager, producer, and buddy. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. No complaints, you know. It's my allergies, man. I don't know what's going on. I never had an allergy in my life until I was like 50. And, you know, it's last year. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I don't know, sneezing and carrying on. I'm like, God, what is going on? But hopefully that's over now. And maybe we'll pass allergy season and get into the summer. I'm really looking forward to the summer. I'm looking forward to, you know, golf whenever I want, weather-wise. And I'm looking forward to some of the summer ingredients, you know. I mean, yeah, I think basil, I think lobsters, I think tomatoes, I think corn, you know. It's kind of fun.
I got to be honest. I'm thinking sweater lately.
Sweater, yeah.
You know, it's 80 a little degrees nippy. A couple of weeks ago, and now it's in the 50s and 60s.
Well, we had our spring in February. Now we're having a, you know, winter in. Hopefully, we'll just transition into summer pretty quickly. Usually, what I say, Memorial Day is the day that
well,
know,
yes,
summer kicks off.
April's always a funky month. You never know. But it's been pretty nice. There's a bit of rain. But all in all, who's complaining? We cheated winter for sure.
I remember years ago when I was working in a place in Westbury called Sirloin Steak Pub when I was a kid. And it was Easter Sunday. It was April, whatever, 7th, 12th, I don't remember. But Easter Sunday in April, we had like 3 feet of snow in a restaurant. I mean, we must have had 500 reservations. The restaurant wound up closing for the day. But, yeah, it was Easter of 1970. It was, God, that's a long time ago. Is that 50-something years ago, you know? I've been at this a long time, Stu, you know?
I it doesn't seem that long, but.
No. I'm in my 55th year.
Really?
Yeah, in the kitchen, you know. We did that thing, you know, with that 10,000 hours of, you know, anything to become an expert. And I was kind of working it out. And I'm somewhere around 187,000 hours. I don't know whether to be proud of that or depressed, you know. What else I could have done, you know, with some of that time. Anyway, it is what it is. And
so I just want to send out condolences to the Stu Leonard family. Our good friend Stu Leonard Jr., his dad passed away last week. At the age of 93. I know it's no solace to anybody, but when in my mind, when someone of that age dies, it's always sad, but it's really a celebration of life. I mean, 93 years old, married for 70 years, started the business.
Yeah, crazy, right?
You know, as we say, once we're here, there's only one thing for sure.
Yeah, that and taxes, right? Yeah, you know, Stu's such a wonderful guy and great family, and they do such a great job with the supermarkets and stuff. I never met his father, but, you know, if the son is any indication of the dad, it's had to be a good guy. So condolences, Stu, and the family, and keep your head up.
And these things happen quick. I mean, I saw a quote from Stu that said, you know, he knew this time would come, but he just can't get his head around it, and as crazy as it is, and sudden as these things are, he goes, just a month ago, Dad was in the swimming pool, and we were hanging out, because I think his parents lived out in the Caribbean or something.
Oh, yeah.
But they had brought him back to New York when he was ill. So, again, condolences to the family. Hope you find the strength to work yourself through the grief of the passing of the patriarch.
Yeah, it's always tough. I know my mom passed away last year, and she was like 92, you know. And she had 90 good years. You know, the last two were a struggle a little bit, mobility struggles and things like that, you know. And you always say, well, it's a blessing. But it's the end of, a very big part of your life. You know, you become an orphan or whatever, you know, which is kind of weird, you know. But
you know,
anyway.
In the Jewish community, yeah. There's a saying, when somebody passes, they say, may the memory of the departed be a blessing to others. And it's hard to really understand that, but I guess it's every time you think about that person, it's a blessing to others.
Yeah, well, you know, smarter people than us came up with all this stuff, you know, so hopefully they're on the money. You know, I don't know. It's a weird thing to think about death. I mean, I'm getting, you know, my expiration date is closer than it used to be. And, you know, you start thinking about, well, you know, did I do everything right? Did I finish everything I wanted to do? you know, my kid's going to be okay. You know, the whole, it's just, it's a wild thought. When I get too much thinking about that, then I open a bottle of Pinot Noir and forget the whole thing, you know. But it's something we all have to, you know, look forward to, as they say.
Sure.
And, you know, hopefully it's later rather than sooner, you know. I'm not ready to check out yet. I got a couple things I'd like to do.
I also want to give a shout out to Bill O'Leary.
Billy.
Traveling down to South Carolina to get his daughter at the University of South Carolina. And I'll use the airwaves to say, unfortunately, Bill, I'm not going down until next week, so we can't have dinner together over at Ruth Chris.
That's the Gamecocks, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing like cheering on the Gamecocks at the stadium.
Yeah, for sure. It's fun to watch. You know, my granddaughter is a pretty good little softball player. Her mother was, you know, world class. Her mother was, my daughter was given a couple of, you know, scholarship opportunities, you know, to play softball in college. And, of course, you know, being much like her mother, she refused to do it. She didn't feel like playing softball anymore. So I had a full ride, you know. I had to do the full ride. But anyway, so Courtney's coaching my daughter's softball team and my granddaughter's softball team. And, you know, she's 8 years old, but she was bumped up to AA with, you know, some of the girls are like 11 and 12. And I went to watch the first game. And it was funny, when I got there, the opposing team was in the field, you know, and they all looked like they were like 16 and over, you know, they're like 5'4", you know, and these little runts come up, you know. But they were like the Bad News Bears. They won like 17-6 or 17-8 or something like that. And, you know, they all knew to run on an overthrow, and they were all stealing. You know, it was like herding cats, you know.
Trying to, they're very young, yes. The ball gets out into the outfield. The whole team goes running after it.
Nuts, you know. It's so much fun to watch, and it's so cute. But, yeah, I was impressed, you know. I was so proud of them. I mean, they did a real good job. So hats off to – and, you know, I got to tell you, Riverhead, you know, my daughter lives out on the North Fork. And the Riverhead – the town of Riverhead does a really good job for kids out there. They have this Stosky Field. There's like four or five baseball fields there with lights and scoreboards. And they have all kinds of, you know, programs and things for the kids. They do a really nice job out there. So kudos to them. And that's about all I have on the softball.
Okay.
Yeah, no
well,
more softball.
I wanted to give another shout-out to one of our P1 listeners, as they call it. Ron Boning writes in that we talked about King Umberto's last week. And he goes on to tell us that there's another great restaurant in that area, in the Franklin Square area, which is Philomena's. And I have heard of that restaurant, and great restaurant.
It's Franklin Square to me has always been kind of flyover country. I don't think I've been in Franklin Square three times in my life. And like West Hempstead, that whole area there, just a little west of Garden City, I very rarely go. I have a friend who lives in the town, but, you know, we socialize outside there, you know. But I did go to a restaurant there, and it was King Umberto's, and it was very good. And there's another place, too, that opened up there, a pizza place, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was kind of an authentic, you know,
There's another one, Carmella's or something.
Yeah, that wasn't it. I'd know it if you said the name.
There's Umberto's.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that.
But that whole area is an interesting area. I mean, I guess you got Hempstead, West Hempstead. You got Garden City Park, Garden City, New Hyde Park, Floral Park. There's a great restaurant in Floral Park, Stella's. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yeah.
That's a great
one. Yeah, well, Stella's been around forever.
Yeah.
I think my ex-mother-in-law got married there, if I'm not mistaken.
They got the Floral Terrace, which was an old-time catering hall in that area, too.
Yeah, don't they have that big German restaurant there, Pladeutsch Park or something?
Pladeutsch is around there, too, yeah. It's a retirement community and a restaurant. And then when you get a little bit north, you get into Garden City itself. And
yeah, Garden City's a fun town. I worked there years ago. A friend of mine who was a professional football player came from Garden City, Don McCauley. He opened up a place called McCauley's. When I was a kid, I worked there for him for a while. And a lot of fun. Town is a party waiting to happen, you know. And Garden City is an interesting little place because it's very parochial. You know, people who come from Garden City tend to stay in Garden City.
It's just
a real kind of towny kind of place, you know.
Garden City knows how to do the nicest Christmas party. In the day, I don't know if they still do it, but the Garden City Hotel, it was guest invite only, but everybody knew somebody, so they got invited. But it was the most elaborate Christmas celebration you'd ever want to go to. Really high end and with tureens and all sorts of stuff that you eat. What's that? Your version of chop liver is?
Oh, foie gras.
Foie gras. I mean, they had the whole thing.
Yeah, no, Garden City Hotel has been, I think, one of the most, underrated or underused assets that we have restaurant-wise and hotel-wise on the island. I mean, it's always been there. I worked there for 2 days when I was a kid at 16 years old with Shorty, the lunatic that I worked with, because he had some kind of history there, and we went back to help him out for Thanksgiving or whatever. And it was, an old-time kitchen. But the family, I can't think of the name of the family that owned it. It began with an N, I think.
Nussdorf or something?
No, it wasn't that.
Look it up.
Look it up, will you? But anyway, and then they had the whole renovation. And my friend John Montgomery was the chef there for a while. And then Stephen DeBron was the chef there for a long time. Richard Allen was a chef there. Chefs didn't last very long there. It was kind of like they used to chew them up and spit them out for some reason. And I think it was the owner. The owner was a little tough to deal with. But Steve DeBruin was there for a long time, maybe 15 years. I think he had the record, But very nice guy and very talented chef. I think he's at the University Club, if I'm not mistaken.
So this might not be the ownership that you're thinking of, but they said that since 2012, Morris Moynihan?
No.
It was the family before.
I begin with an N. I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, with Garden City Hotel, to me, is, they have that one little restaurant when you first walk in there, And now David Burke, who's a, nationally known entity, chef, he took over that restaurant. That's now it's called Red Salt. It's kind of like a steakhouse kind of place, which is supposedly pretty good. I haven't been there. And they do great catering there. They have a tremendous catering facility there, the ballrooms and things. Garden City Hotel is, I love it, man. I love going there. It's kind of like, it's almost like being in the city a little bit. You have that lavish ambiance.
Close. It's the Nelken family.
Nelkins. That's it.
I was one letter off.
Yeah. Wait, well, you had Dusseldorf or something, you said. What do you mean you were close?
Thank goodness we can't roll back the tape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that commercial, I didn't scream. Yes, you did. But anyway, yeah, the Nelken family. Mr. Nelken, an old timer. He was tough. He was tough on chefs. But anyway, it is. It just has that, that kind of city feel to it, And I don't know. I got to get there more often. I don't get west of Oyster Bay much anymore, I'm just between here and out east. I'd have more miles on the LIE, I think, than most truckers have, just going back and forth. But things have been opening up out east. I mean, you're starting to see some places that, shut down for the winter are starting to open up. I know I opened up Allure. There's a bunch of other places that was shut down, and South Old Social, which my partner's involved in, they just opened up for the season. They were closed all winter. So things are starting to pop out there. And if, you decide to take a little ride someday, out to the North Fork and or the South Fork, both a lot of fun for a lot of different reasons.
I don't know if you remember, you were talking about Garden City Hotel, but there was a guy that was sort of like the general manager. It was all, and he's worked a couple places since, Nassar Saman.
I don't know him.
He was a pretty interesting individual, just very receptive to ideas and events and stuff.
You were telling him how to run a hotel.
So if anybody is in contact with Nassar, let him write to us here at fire@whli.com.
There you go. I love the way you snuck that in. That's some smooth.
And
stuff,
I only said it once because Louise in the office always says, "I go fire@whli.com." fire@whli.com, but I didn't. I did it singular.
All right. Well, I'm proud of you. You're getting so big. Anyway, so let's talk about some spring food here and transitioning into summer. I'm doing a wine dinner, that's members only, so I can't. But it's fun to play with these items that are coming out now, all these foodstuffs. So the first course, I decided this is about spring, Stu, okay? It's all about spring. So we have the first course is, and this is just to give you some ideas of things to play with. We did a sort of a mushroom and fava bean crostini. You know, so I'm, you know, sauteing some mushrooms with a little bit of truffle oil, salt and pepper. And then I use a little bit of like a demi-glaze, which is a very, very reduced beef stock, just to tighten it together. And a fresh fava beans, and we put that on a little crostini with vincotto.
So I have to interrupt. I went to an event at a political event out in Patchogue. Not all that familiar with Patchogue, but when you talk about party towns, you know, it reminded me of even probably Rockville Center on steroids, or Farmingdale Main Street on steroids. I mean, it's just such a huge footprint and so much going on. But I went to this event, and it was like, I guess, billed as a cocktail party fundraiser.
Right.
And they had some crudité out. They had, just like you said, you know, crostini.
You're going to tie the mushroom thing in now.
No, but they served the Mediterranean thing. There was hummus, and there was, I guess, pita bread.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was...
I can't wait for this pronunciation.
Chickpeas.
There you go. Garbanzos.
Garbanzo beans and cucumber, like a little bit of like a salad or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But there was no way to eat it.
Really? Well, yeah.
They because once you put it on your plate, you can't put that on the pita, the beans.
No.
And I had to go into the kitchen and get a fork or a spoon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's kind of a silly plating for, you know.
And they were a big thing. It was honey on everything. But some of it was good. They had like a flatbread pizza that had date and probably like a goat cheese or something.
Okay.
And then they even had a cheese platter that they drizzled honey over, which was interesting.
I hope they had toothpicks, because once you get honey on your fingers, it's all over.
Well, I guess you were there because they didn't have toothpicks.
That's not good. That's not good.
But the food was good. It was just, you know, I guess a little bit of a challenge. But at any rate, we want to hear about your wine dinner.
You ready now? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So the second course, what we did was we did a rabbit ravioli. So what I did was, I cooked rabbit down in like a very, very kind of herbaceous kind of broth with carrots, onions, and celery, a little sage, and some fresh thyme. And boiled that down till the rabbit was kind of falling apart, and I took the meat off the bones, and I put the meat in a food processor, and I kind of pasted it out. Go ahead. I know you're dying to jump in here.
There was just an article in a newspaper that everybody's abandoning the pet rabbits. Is that why we're talking? That you have access to rabbit?
No, I make it because it's right around Easter. I hope there are no children listening here. But anyway, so ground a rabbit down, we take that broth and we reduce that broth down to a syrup added to the rabbit with a little bit of egg and some herbs and some ricotta cheese and stuff the ravioli. And then we make a brown butter sauce with that, with sage and pickled rhubarb, of all things. And the pickled rhubarb is interesting because the brown butter and the rabbit's kind of rich, and that pickled rhubarb cuts that a little bit, which is kind of fun, And the next course we did was a togarashi, which is like a Japanese pepper blend. A togarashi coated seared tuna, and we served that on a very interesting Thai green papaya slaw with chili and verju, which is kind of fun. The Thai have those very interesting flavors. There's always like lime juice, sugar, fermented fish sauce, and a little bit of oil. It's just their flavors explode. The Thai flavors explode. So that was a lot of fun. And then for the last course, we did a lamb rack with morel mushrooms, which are available this time of year. They're kind of on the expensive side, but they're well worth it if you get a chance. And they look like those conical mushrooms that you would think when you see Alice in Wonderland. Those kind of mushrooms with a lot of holes in them. They look like a sponge. They're very cool and they soak up a lot of sauce, which is great. And then for dessert, we did this. Strawberry and rhubarb, almost like a shortcake. Most people think of strawberry shortcake as that white angel food cake or that regular kind of yellow cake that bakeries have with the white icing and a couple of strawberries on top. But shortcake, short really means biscuit. It's kind of like it means it's not a lot of fat in it, And so make almost like a biscuit, like you would make a regular biscuit, but with sugar in it, you know, and cut that in half and then put them strawberry and rhubarb sauce in there with some fresh strawberries and lavender whipped cream. Oh, it was great. I mean, we had so much fun with it. And it's kind of, you know, kind of an example of cooking around spring because, you know, spring lamb is the name of lamb for a reason. It's, you know, comes this time of year. And the morels and the fava beans and the rabbit and all of that is all, you know, kind of timely for now. So, you know, when you think about, you know, what you're cooking for your family back home or, you know, if you're going out to eat, you know, play around the season. It's kind of fun, you know, when you see a place that has all those, like, seasonal ingredients because, you know, they're fresh in there. You know, this is the time to do that, time to eat this
so
stuff.
So some of the vegetables that you just mentioned, I mean, if I went into the Stop and Shop or whatever, would I find all these things, or is there a, lack of a better term, more sophisticated more in-depth inventory of vegetables? Is there somewhere to go for that?
Yeah,
as a consumer, not as a restaurateur.
I think that you would probably, you know, if you can't get into Restaurant Depot, they may have some of that stuff there. They don't have a lot of esoteric stuff either, honestly. But, you know, if you went into a Whole Foods, I think you'd have a better shot at doing than Stop and Shop, you know. I think they have a little more of a little more of an esoteric variety of,
so when,
you know,
vegetables. We're talking about retailers here. I'm always looking for a sponsor for the radio show. And to our listeners, if you have any ideas, please send them in to fire@whli.com. But I think this is pretty funny and tongue-in-cheek, but I always had a dream that Bed Bath & Beyond would, like, sponsor the show, and then Tom could offer up a interesting utensil or something that's food-related that somebody could go and,
sure,
and get at Bed Bath & Beyond. Well, that never happened, and they're saying goodbye. So,
well, it's Bed Bath & Bankrupt now.
I mean, you know. Well said.
You changed the name, you know. Anyway, so yeah, it's I think that cooking around the seasons is so important, and it's kind of, you know, I always kind of liken a lot of food to music. There's this concept of music about playing the changes, they call it. Now, you can play it like a solo. Let's say you're playing a blues, right? A blues in C would be C, F, and G, the 1-4-5 chords, right? So you can play a C pentatonic minor or a C pentatonic major all the way through. But more sophisticated guys, the guys that play jazz, they'll switch to the F chord, you know, when they'll switch to the F scale when the F chord comes into G scale, when the G scale comes along. And it's the same kind of with cooking, where you kind of, you know, you don't want to be cooking, you know, braised, you know, beef in August. I mean, it's just pointless. There's so many good things out there. So cooking around the seasons, almost like playing around the changes, you know, you want to kind of see what's out there and see what's fresh. I mean, I could spend an hour or two in the vegetable aisle at one of the better, you know, supermarkets. I just find it fascinating to look and see what's ripe and, you know, how they're handling it and what's in there. And, you know, all those colors, I mean, it's just an explosion of beauty, I think, when you go into a vegetable store. I mean, fish is kind of the same way for me. If they're all whole, you know, you can see the colors and the, you know, once it's filleted, it's all kind of looks the same. But spend, you know, a half an hour in a vegetable aisle. You know who has great vegetables? You know who has a great vegetable section? It's H Mart, the Korean
really?
Store. Oh, my God. Yeah, the vegetables are phenomenal. You know, I think there's one in Hicksville, and it's on 107, right in that shopping center that's just south of the Northern State on the west side of the street. There's a Fanatico restaurants in there. You know,
oh,
the Fanatico.
Sure, sure. Do they have multiple locations, the market? Because I think there's something in Williston Park or something.
I think there is. There's one, over that way. There used to be one over by South Oyster Bay Road and Old Country Road. I don't know if it's still there. If I'm not mistaken, there may be one out east. But I got to tell you, you go into the vegetable market at, you know, the Koreans, I mean, they had this whole culture around vegetables and fish. You'll see a lot more stuff there than you'll see in any of the other places. So if you're really looking for, you know, morel mushrooms and or, you know, fava beans or stuff like that that you don't normally see in ShopRite, I would give H-Mart a try because they just about have everything. I mean, it's Disneyland for foodies if you want to go there and, you know, find an awful lot of Japanese and Asian ingredients that you wouldn't find. You notice most supermarkets have a little Asian section that's about, you know, 2 feet by 2 feet, and they have a couple of, you know, different brands of soy sauce and hoisin or something, you know. But this is just nuts. They have everything from, you know, whenever I run out of, you know, sometimes I'll run out of, like, black rice or whatever, and if I can't get the purveyor to come or if, you know, I need it in a hurry, I'll just run down to H-Mart. They always have everything I need. It's a real good resource, and it's not just for Koreans, you know. I mean, I know a lot of... you know, American shop there, you know, it's just a, and the cakes. Do you ever eat Korean cake?
I'm not knowledgeable. That's why I need to go on this restaurant crawl with you.
You do, you do.
Asian edition.
Yes, yes. Well, the Korean cakes, they have a bakery there. They're the lightest, creamiest, dreamiest. I don't know how they do it. I mean, you know, I've been at this food thing a long time. I don't know, the way they, there's something in the flour or whatever. They make these cakes that are just, A, they're gorgeous. I mean, you know, each one is a work of art. And they're just, they taste so good. And you don't feel like you swallowed a small farm animal after having a slice. You know, it's kind of light. And you should check it out. If you're ever in need of a birthday cake or whatever, H-Mart is the way to go. I mean, it's just great. You know, not that the bakeries, is obviously great bakeries on Long Island. But those Korean cakes are kind of special. I really like them a lot, you know.
So you were talking about seasonal vegetables and maybe meals. Is there anything seasonal about a bakery?
You mean, what, you know, what they're using, you mean? Seasonal fruit, you know, you got, they use a lot of fruit in bakeries, obviously. So, yeah, you
I
know.
I mean, other than, you know, holiday editions, you know, where you have Irish soda bread or whatever, but.
Yeah, I think, you know, some bakeries probably do that around the seasons. You know, when stone fruit comes in, you can make crostatas and things like that. I guess most bakeries are just, you know, they're doing cakes and things, you know. When I go into these places, I basically see, you know, a case with, you know, different types of cakes in. But, you know, you have these specialty bakeries like, what's that one that's in Plainview there that my buddy owns?
Well, there's Sweet Surrender, isn't that?
Sweet Karma. Yeah, Sweet Karma. He does a lot of interesting stuff.
And
Ryan.
Where is he? Because he's
in Plainview on Bonetto Hill Road.
Okay, I passed something in Levittown called Sweet Surrender. I thought that was his, but now that you jog my memory and some of the dust that gets jiggled off up there, it's
yeah, Sweet Karma. Brian's an interesting guy. Brian Fishman is his name.
Yeah, he...
And I met Brian, I got to be 30 years ago when I had 107 in Locust Valley. And I hired Brian as a pastry chef. So he comes in the first day in the morning and he's got sugar everywhere. He's got, you know, pulled sugar hanging from, you know, the tables because, you know, he was doing these like pulled, like long sort of strands, almost like linguine with sugar. He's got them all over the place. I walk in, there's flour everywhere, there's sugar everywhere. I'm like, geez, I'm not going to survive this. And he was a bit of a head case, and you know, I can say that because we're dear friends, right? So he was there 10 minutes. I said, Brian, here's the deal. If you don't leave the premises within 5 minutes, I'm going to get violent. I can't do this. Right? So I fired him 15 minutes after he came in, right? Because he was such a pain in the rear end. Anyway, turns out that Brian went on to have a stellar career, and he got his own bakery, and he's doing great, and I use his stuff occasionally, and I send people there all the time. He's a great guy.
I had a couple of birthday cakes, because around the time that he was here as a guest, I guess I threw a party for Kerry. And
oh, did you? Yeah.
Had everything from, like, he made a Bloomingdale's bag.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's,
cake.
Yeah, he's a talented guy.
The other
guy.
One was like a marquee, and it was, you know, Memories of the 21st birthday.
Yeah, yeah. No, he does some great cakes. I've used some of his cakes for bar mitzvahs and things like that, you know, when kids want, you know, a cake with like a basketball shape or a guitar or something like that. He's the guy. I mean, Brian's a very, very talented guy. I think he's been on one of those silly shows, you know, chop baking or whatever the hell I do. You know, I got to tell you, somebody was talking to me about those TV shows now, and they're getting so silly, the cooking competition shows. It's I don't know. I used to enjoy it watching, you know, they do Chopped. It was kind of fun. And my buddy Mark Bynum, you know Mark,
mm-hmm.
He was on there a couple times. One, I think he won two or three of them, whatever.
Then there was some girl, Courtney something, that was involved in something.
Oh, yeah?
Your daughter.
I remember her, yeah. She's vaguely, she was...
But what was the show that she did touched on?
She was on with Tom Colicchio and, not Padma, it was three judges. It was a morning show. I don't remember the name of it. But it was a morning show, and they had three contestants on, my daughter and two other people. It was a lot of fun to watch, you know. Anyway, but the cooking competition shows, to me, are starting to get so silly. I was invited to do Chop Professionals, you know, but it was filming out in California. And frankly, you know what? If I was 30 years younger, maybe, or 40 years younger, maybe I'd do it, you know. But to me, to go on a show and have everybody critique your dish that, you know, they gave you rabbit noses, you know, pastrami and, you know, I don't know, cow testicles, you know, no thank you. I can pass on that, you know. And that's what it's getting to be. They're using all these odd ingredients. And remember, were you the host when I had Alex Guarnaschelli on the show? Or was that Sue?
Probably Sue.
Alex Guarnaschelli, who's, you know, one of the Chop judges. She's there all the time. She has her own show. I don't know, Alex in the parking lot or something like that. Anyway, you know, nice woman, long brown hair. And I remember saying to her, it was so funny, you know, with radio, you have to have banter back and forth to keep it interesting, right? And I said to her, you know, you've been Chop judge for, I don't know, 10 years now, whatever. Have you ever tasted something, you know, because the ingredients are really out there. Have you ever tasted something you just couldn't swallow? It was terrible. And she goes, no. I'm like, can you follow up with that a little bit, you know? But it was funny. I mean, I'm just thinking there has to be some stuff that these judges get that it's just not palatable because of the ingredients, you know. And I think that they've just gone so Hollywood with these shows that, I don't know, I kind of lost my interest in them. And the shame of it is a lot of these shows are the reason that some of these kids are getting into, you know, cooking schools and they're going to, you know, study, whatever. And, you know, I think they're going to come out and then, you know, graduate school and get on a TV stage and become Bobby Flay, you know. It's just doesn't happen like that. And the disillusionment on their faces, you know, when I see it, you know, after they've been peeling beets for 2 years at, you know, $18 an hour, you know, all of a sudden it's like the sparkle's off the cooking thing. And I think that it really sends the wrong message. It kind of, you know, glamorizes a profession that, you know, I mean, if it's in your DNA, there's some glamour in it. But glamour to me is, you know, up to my arms in vegetables and fish stuff and, you know, and filleting and stuff. That to me is the fun part of it, not the, you know, the recognition is nice. And I'd be lying if I say I don't use it for my own purposes. But, you know, I don't believe most of that stuff. It's just, you know, every restaurant's as good as the person that just left happy. That's the bottom line. You know what I mean? And restaurant business is all perception. I mean, I look at places that some of these people say on the internet, you know, this is my favorite place over there, and I'm thinking, God, I've been there, and it's not for me, you know. But so what, you know? It doesn't have to be for me. It's for them, and, you know, and if they think that's the best restaurant that they've ever been to, then you know what? Good for you. Go there. Who am I to argue, you know?
So here, that brings an interesting thought to me. When I go to a restaurant, so many times one of my dining guests will go to the waitress or waiter, when they're looking at the menu. What do you like? Well, I don't think it's I don't think it's relative.
It's not relative or relevant.
But I gave it a lot of thought, and I said, well, if they actually ask this question, there might be more intel shared, which is, what is the most popular dish on the menu? Something like that gives more insight than what the personal taste of your waiter is.
See, I have a whole different take on this.
Okay, all right? Share.
I'll do this especially if I know the chef, and I know a lot of them, so it happens somewhat frequently. But even if I don't, sometimes, you know, look at, if the place isn't rocking, if the place is rocking, I don't, you know, I don't want to bother anybody. But if the place isn't all that busy, you know, because I dine out generally on weeknights, I'll say, you know what? Tell the chef, send me out some. Send me out whatever he wants. I don't know. And generally that tells the chef, hey, dude, you got license to do whatever you want. You want to do something special, do something special. You want to give me your best dish, give me your best dish. You need to get rid of something, I'm here for you. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I'd rather leave it in the chef's hands because the waiters, you know, half the waiters don't know what, you know, what the food is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've had waiters at work for me that couldn't tell you what the ingredients were in a certain dish, you know? What do you like? Who cares what they like? I don't care. But the chef's a different guy, you know? I mean, he's the guy back there in charge. He knows what came in today, what came in yesterday, what we got to get rid of, what I think is cool, what's, you know, sounding pretty good, what I just made, you know? So let him do it. He's the guy. He's the architect. He's the guy that's going to, you know, do the actual cooking. So I would trust him. You know, if you want to play that game about, you know, what do you think I should have? Okay, fine. Well, ask the chef. He's the guy that's in charge, you know. The waiters, you know, I mean, they might have, the chef might have said, listen, you know, I got this chicken. I got about another day and a half on this chicken. I got to get rid of it, you know. Sell the chicken, you know. So you don't know, you know. You don't know how to do that. And it's live radio, Stu.
As long as it's not a bill collector.
Yeah, no, thanks. But, yeah, I think that's the way to go. I mean, and, you know, you'd be surprised at what you get. And don't do this on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, all right? That's when the chef's, you know, half out of his mind in the back there. You don't want to do that. But if you're in a place that's not crazy busy and, you know, they may be into it, they may not. But, I would say, you know what? Tell the chef to send me out his best dish. Send me out what he really thinks is great. And you'll get a 9 times out of 10 you get a very positive response, and sometimes the chef will even come out and find it, you know, see who you are or whatever, and thank you, or you know, ask you how it was or whatever, so you can build a little repertoire. You know, it's kind of fun, and you get known in a restaurant like, you know, like that. If you go, like, I was always in West End Cafe when I was a cool fish, you know, because Bill, the owner, was a dear friend of mine, a very talented chef. And I would never order off the menu. They would, don't even give me the menu. It's, you hungry tonight, Tom? Yeah, okay, have Bill send me out. What do you want? I don't know, send me out 3 apps. I'm not really starving, you know, I'm just curious. Or, you know what, no apps, just send me an entree. I don't care what it is. Or, you know, I'm in the mood for fish. Give me a piece of fish and however you want to do it. And you'd be surprised. It's kind of fun for the chef to do that. So I think that's the way to go. If you want, you know, a lot of times you get a waiter and you know, they come over, hi, I'm John, I'll be your waiter tonight. And, you know, they're kind of going through the motions. But like you were saying before, and it was a good point, you know, so what, the waiter likes a dish? What if the waiter likes chicken liver? You know, I would be like horrified, you know. So I think the thing to do is, again, not to belabor the point, but, you know, talk to the waiter and say, listen, you know what, go ask the chef what he thinks is the best dish of the night, or what he wants to serve, or what he would eat if he was here, you know. And I think you'll get, I think you'd be surprised at the response you'll get. So listen, we should probably take a little break, right, and pay some bills, and we'll come back in 2 minutes or shortly, and we'll talk about that.
All good.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
So, departing from food for a second, because this is a food, wine, and lifestyle show, this is the lifestyle part, right? So, one of my cars, I have two cars, and the reason I have two cars is because I put so much mileage on it that it cost me the same for two as it would for one. So, I choose to have two. One's convenient, you know, and I use it for work and, you know, like a pickup kind of thing. And the other thing is a regular, you know, SUV. So one of them's coming off lease. So I read this thing on the internet that, hey, your lease, you know, prices are up on used cars. Your lease may be worth more than you think. You know, come on down. We'll give you a price on your lease turning it in. I said, all right. So I call the guy. I said, what's up with that? He goes, well, you know, the used car market is different. You know, it's supply issues and, used cars are in demand, so we pay a little more, and, you know, your car may be worth something, you know, we may be able to give you, you know, a couple thousand dollars towards your next lease or buy or whatever. So I said, okay. He says, when can you come in? I can come in tomorrow morning. That's until next week I'm done. So I get there at 9 o'clock in the morning. Now, I'm coming in from out east, and it was a drive. I'm not going to tell you who it is because it's unimportant, right? So I get there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the general manager says to me, hi, can I help you? I said, yeah, I have this appointment at 9 o'clock. Oh, great, I'll get a salesman. Well, I'm not really looking for a salesman. I'm looking for a guy who said he could, you know, the used car manager was going to take a look at my car and tell me what it was worth. And yeah, okay, fine, well, I'll get the salesman. So the salesman comes over, and he says, what kind of car are you looking for? I said, I'm not looking for a car at the moment. I said, I'm looking to find out what the number is on the lease when I turn it in, and I'll make an informed decision about the car then. Well, you know, hold on. You know, do you have the registration? Yeah, okay. Find the registration. I give it to him.
First, they don't need the registration because all they had to do was go to the window and take the VIN number.
Exactly, right? So anyway, he takes the registration. He goes in the back and he says, well, you know, it's a Ford and, you know, the Edge, I don't know if we can buy it because Ford's kind of picky about that. I said, well, the guy told me. I told him what it was. I said, he asked me what kind of car I had. I said, a Ford Edge. He said, okay, come on in. So here I am, you know. So anyway, rigmarole, what kind of car are you looking for? I'm not looking for a car. So he looks at the registration, and he goes, the last name is Thomas, right? So now if I'm here at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have some fun. Yeah, my last name is Thomas, but you can call me Shardell. Just use my first name, right? So he goes, okay, Shardell. He goes, it's like hilarious, right? I swear this is true. Okay, Shardell, what kind of car are you looking for? I said, I'm looking for this or that and the other thing, maybe, you know. Okay, but, you know, can you give me the number on the other one? Because I'm curious, that's why I'm here. And I don't have a lot of time. I told him I had about 15, 20 minutes. I got to get to Oyster Bay. The guy goes out, looks at my car. He comes back. It's a big secret, you know. Well, in order for us to give you the number, you have to make an appointment. I said, I have an appointment. It's 9 o'clock this morning. I'm here. You know what I mean? No, Shardell. He goes, you have to make another appointment to get the number. Let me understand something here. Why can't you give me the number? Well, you don't have the buyout agreement. I have the buyout agreement in the car. So I go get the buyout agreement. How much is it? 19.8 or whatever. Okay, 19.8. Well, we can probably give you some money above and beyond the 19.8. Okay, how much? You have to make an appointment. Listen, sir, I have an appointment. I'm here. This is the appointment, right? He told me he would come and give me the number. Well, listen, Shardell, I'm sorry. He keeps going. So he brings the other guy. Now they all do the same thing. I've leased 1,000 cars. And I always tell people, listen, here's the deal. I'm here. I got about an hour to deal with this. All right. I'm going to pick out a car. You're going to give me a number. I'm going to say yes or no. I'm not playing a game where you go back there 15 times and we're negotiating over $3. It's just not my thing, right? Anyway, he goes, okay, Shardell, listen, hold on a second. I'll get some money out of here. So the guy comes out. He goes, Mr. Thomas? He goes, Mr. Thomas, this is John, the general manager, or whatever.
Wait, aren't you the guy that used to own Fish Cool?
Yeah. So he goes, Mr. Thomas, this is John. Hi, John. Mr. Thomas, I said, you know what? Call me Shardell.
So, no, you're the fish king.
So, yeah, it's hilarious, right? So he goes, so when are you looking to buy? Will you people stop? I said, I'm not buying a car today. I came here because you told me that you would give me a number on the car. Frankly, I don't even care anymore. It's not that important to me, but I'm here. You have to make an appointment. I know. I went over this. I have an appointment. Today's the appointment. Tell me the number. Couldn't tell me the number. You gotta call me. So he's calling me at, you know, on the station here, trying to get me to call him back. I'm gonna call him back and tell him exactly what I think of the entire operation. Tell you the truth, this is Shardell. Can I
wait? Let me just get my list of potential sponsors out. Bed Bath and
that ain't
broke.
One of them. Bed Bath and bankrupt.
Specific car dealership.
Yeah, the Acme car dealership.
Gone.
You know, Wile E. Coyote, you know, Acme Explosives. It's hilarious. Wait, I mean, you know.
This is a request to Mike Dorio. Might you have a couple of extra
shekels
bucks to maybe sponsor Playing with Fire?
God, I'm telling you.
Don't piss them off.
It was so, how do people get through? You know, I'm this guy is, he's dealing with other people. You're looking at my registration and you see it and you think Thomas is my last name. I mean, it's like beyond, so I figured, hey, listen, if I'm here and annoyed, I might as well have some fun, you know. So anyway, I got to call him back after the show. But yeah, the whole thing was just, it was a surreal, you know, kind of not bait and switch so much, but, you know, to get you in there, you know? I'm like, hey, dude, I just drove an hour and 10 minutes for this, you know?
Well, considering this isn't a auto show, but I'll just throw my two cents in. Right after COVID, you know, there was craziness with cars.
Yeah.
And the dealerships were trying to acquire cars so they could sell them, at least have used cars.
Sure,
to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't get the business model because they would send out these emails, we'll buy you out of your lease early, this, that, and the other, and give you a great deal. But like in Carrie's case, she had a truck and she had it because of the kids. So if she gave up the truck, she would have to replace it with something.
Right. 'Cause
running around on a bicycle with a couple of kids on the back,
it's a problem, yeah.
Didn't work.
You need two baskets.
And then when you looked at what the options were for the replacement, first of all, it was a 6-month wait because there was no such thing as buying something off the lot as far as a new vehicle.
Sure.
And it was double the lease payment. So what was the sense of doing that? And in today's economic climate and car availability, most people or a lot of people are buying their cars off lease because they can't afford the new prices for a new lease.
Sure.
So everything is crazy.
It is. It's nuts. It's nuts, you know.
But at any rate, let's talk about food.
Yeah, all right. You got any ideas, anything you want to know? If not, I'll just riff.
You know, when you get into winter, there's some robust stews and thick soups that come to mind. What comes to mind that's, again, light, refreshing? Again, my favorite show, Below Deck, I think they were doing something with a watermelon and feta or goat cheese
salad
or whatever, or skew.
Gazpacho, too. I mean, you know, you make gazpacho a lot of ways. Gazpacho being a cold soup.
I can't believe you brought that up.
You can make it with watermelon, too.
So
watermelon.
I asked somebody to make me some gazpacho, Mom. but I want to just ask you, I mean, this was convenient. But part of her recipe actually was with V8 juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if it was you doing it, you would start from the beginning rather than I guess, using a already seasoned base.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, most of it's tomato-based, but you can make a watermelon gazpacho. I mean, there's variations on the theme. The cold soup that I favor the most is I do... And I'll give you an interesting take on menu wording, is a cold corn soup. You know, because corn to me, it's people avoid it. I don't know if they get some kind of GMO thing or whatever's going on. But, you know, corn is one of those vegetables that people tend to avoid, believe it or not, in restaurants. And I don't know why. I mean, it tastes great, you know. So I guess it doesn't have as much nutritional value as some of the others or whatever it is. But bottom line is it makes a great soup. So, you know, I'll take fresh corn. You peel the corn, right? I take the corn off the cob, and I use the cob to make a stock. All the cobs, you know, I'll put them like bones, you know. And I'll you know, fill them with water and carrots, celery, onions, some herbs or whatever, and make this stock. And what happens is there's natural sugars in the corn. So it gets this kind of glycerin-y feel when you reduce it down enough, you know. And it's a very, very strong corn flavor. And that's the base of my soups, whether I make a corn chowder or a shrimp and corn bisque or something along those lines. And, you know, so I'll make this, like, corn bisque. It's just corn and the stock. So I'll sauté, like, onions and celery. I don't use carrots because I don't want any color in there, right? So I'll sauté onions and celery and put a little fresh thyme in there, whatever, and dump a bunch of corn in, fill it up with the corn stock, reduce that down, season it up, and then I blend it down in a blender so it's smooth, you know. Now you got to be careful. Can't put hot stuff in a blender because you blow the top right off with the steam, right? I did that. I was trying to, just this week, and I know better, but I was in a hurry. I had a party coming up. I had to get this done, and I didn't hold it down, the top down hard enough, and boom, it went up. I had corn everywhere, you know. So, but you have to wait till it cools. But once you blend it down and add a little cream, you have this beautiful corn, like bisque or whatever, you know. So I was doing this cold corn soup with crab meat and a little caviar and a little bit of basil oil. I sold like three. And I'm like, what a shame. It's a really cool, you know, appetizer. So I start thinking, and I'm experiencing this. So I said, maybe it's the wording, because wording means everything on a menu, right? So I changed the wording, corn vichyssoise, with crab, caviar, and basil oil. I sell the whole thing out. Same soup, different name. It's the same thing with this. There's certain menu items like chichi or garbanzo. It's like a death sentence on the menu. You can't use it, you know. If I do a salad of preserved tuna with garbanzo beans, which is like kind of an Italian thing, I'll sell three. If I do a Tuscan style salad, you know, with Tuscan beans and preserved tuna, I sell it out. It's a psychological thing. Yeah. It's really kind of cool. And I've gotten good at it because I've been at it so long. But, word to any, new restaurateurs out there, words matter on a menu.
So two things come to mind real quick. Just to go back to your cold corn chowder, and it sounds delicious, the crab meat.
Yeah.
The caviar, is that to give it like a salted flavor or?
Yeah, it's just a little garnish too. I sometimes use like flying fish roe. I'll use an orange, flying fish roe, because it kind of, between the green of the thing and the yellow of the corn and the orange, it's just an eye appeal thing.
So if I had sound effects, there would be screeching tires right now. So it just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Sunday before the Kentucky Derby.
Yes.
Therefore, I need some last-minute thoughts as we get towards the end of the show of what to serve at a Kentucky Derby party.
Well, Southern food, I would do. I'm actually doing a Kentucky Derby party. And I did a couple of things that, there's always that pimento cheese thing that people love. Kentucky Brown. Have you ever heard of Kentucky Brown? It's like a grilled cheese sandwich with turkey and bacon and tomato. I would do ribs. I would do some kind of Southern fried chicken. And I believe it or not, I'm doing a mint julep meatball. How's that for you?
I'm going to use some that. Tom Shordell lingo. That sounds like confusion.
No, it's not. I'm doing meatballs, and I'm going to do them with a bourbon glaze, which is as Kentucky as you get. And I'm doing them on a skewer with a little mint leaf and a piece of cucumber.
Now you explained yourself.
See that?
And it's very logical.
Makes sense. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And we'll see. I mean, because I'm doing this at the club, and I've had more than one person go, what are you doing with that, you know? But, it's kind of, I tend to go Southern. Some of this stuff, like the pimento cheese, that's a big Southern thing. I don't know if it translates to a Northern party.
Pimento cheese.
Yeah, it's cheese with pimentos in it, basically. You can get any recipe on the internet. But, I would do some kind of barbecue, whether it's ribs or chicken or, you can even do pulled pork or pulled chicken. Again, Southern fried chicken is always, that's a big one.
So the truth be told, I am going to be down in Florida next Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And I'm attending a Kentucky Derby party. First, I got to figure out what to wear because there's a whole theme here, and I'm not quite sure what attire.
I can't picture you in a hat.
I'm not
hat with flowers on it.
I actually have to Google, what attire would be. But I'm curious, and the skewer, the meatball skewer with
cucumber and mint.
The mint is so on the mark, but and obviously with the did you say infused with bourbon or glazed with
glazed with bourbon
because I know part of the party is as big as your bar was at Jewel. I'm told this house that we're going to has a bourbon collection that rivals the size of your bar.
Look out.
But I'm again everything you're saying seems to be right on, and I'm just curious to see the Floridian take on a Kentucky Derby themed food party.
Yeah, well, we're going to do bourbon and blues, so we got a blues band coming. It's the Hot Sauce Blues Band, which consists of the drummer from Wondrous Stories, the keyboard player from Led Zeppelin Tribute Band, Mike Dorio, Cosmo Malardi, who's actually an Emmy Award-winning bass player, and yours truly.
Wow.
So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We're going to
If there was ever a reason to join a country club, the one that you're at is the one I would join because there's so many things you share with us as a tease. Because as not being members, we're not allowed in the doors.
Right. Well, what we've done, the manager and myself, Don Molitor, who's a very talented guy. He's been managing clubs his whole life, and you know, so he kind of introduced me to the club world. I kind of introduced him to restaurant food. And so we make a really good pair because, you know, when I get a little too restaurant-y, he reels me in. And when he gets a little too clubby, I reel him in. And, you know, we've been able to transform this club from, I want to say, the 70s into 2020, you know, food-wise and parties-wise. You know, people don't use clubs the way they used to. The younger people, you know, the 30-ish guys, you know, they come play golf. They want to eat something. They don't want to go to galas and dinner dances, and they don't want half a chicken with a baked potato. You know, like the older, you know, the older club people, it was the hub of their social life, you know. That's not the case anymore. So if you want me to get people in here, I'm competing with Rothman's and Copper Hill and Sandbar and all these restaurants that are around to get people in. So my food has to be, it can't be club food, like, you know, like you think of it. It has to be hipper and cooler and newer. And I think some of the clubs are starting to realize that, and they're hiring restaurant chefs.
What's the name of the club that you're at?
Mill River. But, you know, Glen Oaks did it in the 90s. They hired Alex Lee, who was Daniel Ballou's sous chef. And, you know, Piping Rock had Blake Verity, you know, and C. Wayne had Richard Allen. These were all restaurant guys.
No, but, it's an interesting quandary where you present. Your club is literally around the corner from Rothman's. And, you know, that's a great dining spot. And, you know, it would be a toss to figure out what to do. But again, having your take on the so-called food at within a club would be incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know, 95% of the people love what we're doing there. You know, 3% of the people wish it was like it was in the 70s. 2% of the people can't understand what I'm doing. You know, I had one guy, can't you make a normal soup? I'm like, like Alphabet?
I just remember in the old days being a guest at the Engineers Country Club in Roslyn and their Sunday night clam bakes and the opulence, because people would just rip the tail off the lobster and throw the rest away. And, you know, there would be four of those on their plate and the ribs and everything. Again, your club, I'm sure, has a more expansive and variety, which would be very tasty.
Well, the thing is, that's why a lot of clubs went broke and died, because, you know, there was no discipline there. You know, they were running it like the government. You know, and it's fine if you want to run that the way, and at the end of the year, everybody assesses, you know, they throw in $5,000 to make up for the losses. But what would happen was, you know, they get an assessment, and people would leave the club and go to someplace else, you know. So they would destroy the place they were at and go on to the next, you know, it's nuts. So it's all changing, and hopefully, you know, they get with the program. We'll see. Anyway, that's it for today. We got to go, Stu. It went quick, didn't it?
It did.
All right, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life. Like usual is Tom's Three Keys to Life. Like usual is Tom's Three. His life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.